All right, Travis, I know you have one Super Bowl. Your brother Jason, he has one Super Bowl. How important is it for you to win this Super Bowl so you can go home and have bragging rights?
Woo! Ali, you know those bragging rights at the dinner table, everything, man. This one might take the cake. The fact that we both made it to the mountaintop and then to let them know I made it twice, I mean, it's already there. But I got to go out here and get this ring if we get the job done.
Travis Kelce is having the best season of his life, which might culminate in a second Super Bowl ring this Sunday. If so, the Chiefs tight end would surpass Jason Kelce, his NFL All-Pro brother. But Patrick Mahomes' favorite target may never have made it to the league, if not for Jason's interventions. Today, the story of how Jason got Travis the second chance he needed, more than once. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, February 4th. This is ESPN Daily. Lisa, it is great to have you on the show. Thank you for joining me.
Great to be here.
Lisa Salters is a reporter for E60 and Monday Night Football. I am bringing you on today to talk about somebody that you know well, someone who's almost been weirdly going under the radar in this run-up to Super Bowl 55, despite being a six-time Pro Bowler and the best tight end in the league for years now and gaining over 1,400 yards receiving this season, the most a tight end has ever had in NFL history, all of which makes him a legitimate candidate for Offensive Player of the Year this season.
Throws it late for the end zone! Kelce wide open! Touchdown! Kansas City! Why not? Mahomes to Kelce again!
But Lisa, you profiled Travis Kelce for E60 a couple years ago, focusing on his evolution, his relationship with his older brother and fellow Pro Bowler Jason Kelce, the center for the Eagles. So to just start off here, how would you describe Travis's personality?
Oh, those two brothers, they're as thick as thieves, first of all. They're best friends, but they could not be any more different in terms of personality. Jason is the older brother. And I guess he kind of acts like the older brother. He's more reserved, whereas Travis is all over the place. He's just full of personality, colorful.
Go! Come on, baby! Let's go!
Like in the end zone, it's just like I turn into just happy-go-lucky kid.
And there's another little dance by Kelce.
That life is so surreal that I'm in the end zone in the NFL. I'm just going to go ahead and dance this off.
So as of this moment, Lisa, Travis Kelce is off preparing to play in his second Super Bowl this weekend after winning it last year. And older brother Jason, he won a title with the Eagles 3 years ago and is now kind of on the tail end of his career. But I want to go back with you to their early years together. What were they like as kids?
Well, they grew up outside of Cleveland in an area called Cleveland Heights. Just looking at the old videos of Travis being the ham in front of the camera.
Hey, Trav, man, a little smile while you're eating. For the camera, Jason?
He was constantly just pestering his big brother, just getting on his nerves all the time.
Trav was always trying to get me into trouble. He was always like pestering me.
Ah, man, I was a menace. I kind of thrived off of getting in just enough trouble to where I could charm my way out of it.
Their parents both say that everything was a competition with those two, whether it was who could get to the dinner table first, who was better in this sport, who was better in that sport, that they were constantly competing, but in a loving way, and a loving little brother, big brother way.
Either I was going to his baseball game, he was going to my football game. We're always doing something.
Travis told me that he really only started playing football because Jason played it.
I only played football because he was playing football. All he knew is that he was going to work hard and give it his best. And sure enough, I was sitting there taking notes, watching him do it the entire time.
So by Jason's senior year in high school, he is the star running back. He's a linebacker. And Travis, who basically decided to play football because Jason was playing football, he is the starting quarterback, and they are extremely excited to finally officially be playing together. What ends up happening, Lisa?
Well, that did not end up happening.
Being the fun, happy-go-lucky guy and just trying to enjoy life, I ended up failing French. And I couldn't play my sophomore year of football.
I think he probably felt like he was had let me down because he missed an opportunity. That was my senior year. That was the only chance we were really going to get to play together. I was looking forward to it.
It was an embarrassing time, knowing that I should have been the starting quarterback, helping my brother shine in his senior year.
Jason ends up at the University of Cincinnati. He walks on, he switches to offensive line. Travis is back playing quarterback in high school at Cleveland Heights, but he's not really being recruited heavily at all. What does Jason decide to do?
Jason decided to kind of lobby his coaches at Cincinnati and say, hey, you guys need to take a look at my brother. And I remember Travis saying that he would often go visit Jason on campus. And it really wasn't until he was there in person and the coaches saw him in person, were like, who is that dude? Who is that big guy?
I kind of pushed it a little bit. I'm like, you know, why aren't we offering my brother? I think once they saw him, they realized, you know, how big he was, his athleticism and everything. That's when they really started to recruit him.
Once they kind of saw him in person and married that to the tape that they were seeing, that's when they offered Travis a scholarship to come play for the Bearcats.
So in 2009, Lisa, Travis and Jason are finally playing together on the same football team. Travis is this Wildcat quarterback for the Bearcats, and Jason is his center. So he's literally snapping the ball to his little brother. The dream, it would seem, is finally realized. How did their debut together go?
It was the first game the two had ever played together, and Jason snaps the ball to Travis, and Travis, who's the Wildcat quarterback, scores a touchdown.
Kelsey stays at a quarterback. Again, it's a keeper at the goal line. Touchdown, Cincinnati.
They're thinking the sky is the limit. I know Travis was certainly thinking the sky is the limit.
I was having the time of my life playing quarterback in college with my brother. I'm running right behind his big behind.
Travis told me he was thinking that he was going to end up, you know, in the Heisman conversation, that they might possibly down the road win a national championship. Their time had finally come, the time for the Kelsey brothers to light up the field together. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. For whatever reason, whether it was the scheme or just because Travis was so young, he didn't get much playing time after that. But the team did end up going to a bowl game that year, and it was in New Orleans. And Travis decided to live it up a little bit in New Orleans with some teammates. He was out in the streets partying.
I was down there partying, drinking, smoking, trying to enjoy life and doing things that I wasn't supposed to be doing.
A couple days later, he was drug tested. That's what happens when you're in college. You could be randomly drug tested at any time.
The NCAA came with a drug test, and my heart literally just went sunk right to the floor.
He says when he found out he was going to be drug tested, he knew what was going to happen next. A few days later, he got called into coach's office, and coach told him, you tested positive for marijuana. And you are off the team.
Son, you're off the team. I'm taking your scholarship. You'll never play a down of football here at the University of Cincinnati again. That kind of stuff is inexcusable, and I will not tolerate it on my football team.
Just to hear him retell that story, he just broke down into tears all over again.
This is exactly how I reacted. I didn't argue with him. At that point in time, I felt like I didn't have anything to argue against. I just felt kind of, you know, empty.
He knew that he had brought it on himself. Just to see him weep like that again as a grown man was really moving.
You're going to get it together, you're going to figure it out, or you can get stuck back in Cleveland trying to tell the story of Trying to tell the story of who you could have been.
All right, Lisa, up next. How Travis gets a second chance with the help, once again, of his big brother, Jason.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Lisa. So I want to get in the time machine and head with you back to 2010 because Travis Kelce has just been kicked off the football team at Cincinnati. He has no direction, no real prospects at this point. Where does he turn?
Where else? To his big brother, Jason.
I kind of asked him to move in with me so I could keep a closer eye on him and maybe he would take things a little bit more serious.
Jason said, look, you can either go back to Cleveland Heights and do nothing, or you can come stay here and live with me off of campus.
Luckily enough, he had a big enough room to fit two queen-size beds in. We're dang near sleeping right next to each other.
Jason, I believe, was living with three other football players. And so even though Travis wasn't able to be on the team, Jason was offering him a chance to be around the team.
I had to find a way to pay for school.
He started working as like a telemarketer to try and raise money.
Can you imagine Travis Kelce?
Wait a minute.
telemarketer.
You could pick up the phone and Travis Kelce is like the supposedly possibly automated voice on the other line.
He was a telemarketer. He said I would get cussed out. Well, you know how you do when you answer the phone and it's
yes,
a telemarketer.
Yes.
Sometimes you're nice and sometimes you're not so nice. He said it was really hard to come home every day and see those guys. Being part of the team, and he wasn't. It was a daily reminder of the humiliation that had happened to him, that he had been kicked off of the team. But he persevered, and I think that that was something that Jason wanted to see how he was going to respond to this crappy situation that he was in.
I truly feel like that was like one of the best things that's ever happened to him, because up until that point, he hadn't really been through like a major adverse situation to like have to overcome something and have to work hard.
Lisa, there's an amazing alternate timeline in which Travis Kelce is still telemarketing, but back in our reality, what else was Jason doing for him?
Well, he was lobbying to get Travis back on the team.
My brother came in. My brother came in like he was Superman. I don't know what the heck he told him. I don't know what he said.
I remember me telling him, you know, Travis is a good kid. He just made a stupid mistake. Not only is he a great player, but he's a great person. Everybody loves him. He's a great teammate.
Midway through the spring ball that year, I got a call from Coach Jones, and he said, come meet me in my office. He told me I had to maintain a 3.0. I had to not miss a single class, which at that time in my life was unheard of.
It was virtually a no tolerance policy. He had to do everything right. But not only did he get a 3.0, he made the dean's list. He had to live up to his part of the bargain, and he did that. And he was then reinstated to the team.
And what is happening to Jason in his own career at this point?
Well, Jason Kelce is being drafted to the Philadelphia Eagles by head coach Andy Reid. So all along, Jason Kelce has always set this roadmap for how to succeed in life. And Travis has always seen that. Sometimes he's veered off the path a little bit, but when he needs to get back on the straight and narrow, all he has to do is look to Jason. And I'm sure for Travis to see Jason be drafted by a great organization like the Eagles, a great head coach, Andy Reid, that was something that he also aspired to do.
So Travis really only started playing tight end, Lisa, as a junior in college, which is utterly insane given everything he's accomplished since then. How quickly did he learn the position?
Quickly. That was one of the things when Butch Jones brought him back onto the team. He said, look, we don't need a quarterback anymore.
He said, I don't need a quarterback. And I think you'd be a heck of a tight end. Everyone sees your athletic ability, and we think you'd be an awesome tight end for us if you want to try and earn a scholarship at tight end. And at that point, I was like, yeah, I could care less what position I play right now.
He was just so happy to be back on the team. Like, he probably would have been the place kicker if they'd asked him to. You know, look at him. He is a prototypical tight end.
Yes.
Wynn throws it to Kelce. Kelce's going to score 37 yards.
So he took to it like a duck to water, set all kinds of records.
Kelce, the big tight end with the game's biggest play, 83 yards.
But there were these questions still, presumably, from scouts about Travis character-wise after all that stuff.
Of course. He was just a couple of years removed from being kicked off of a Division I program. So, of course, there were questions about his character, whether he's going to be committed to a pro team or whether he's just going to be this happy-go-lucky guy getting into trouble all the time.
There were still some questions in the air and the red flag of getting suspended. So I had to answer that question.
So I want to fast forward to the 2012 draft now, because Travis and Jason and the rest of the family, they're all sitting there hoping that Travis's name gets called, but they don't know when. So what happens that night?
Well, they don't hear his name called in the first couple of rounds, and Travis is pretty salty about that.
What the heck is going on? Like, why can't a team just take a chance on me?
He says he still remembers hearing the names of the other tight ends who were drafted ahead of him. And, I mean, he knew the reason that teams had questions about his character. But he finally did hear his phone ring.
I finally get a call. And it's a Missouri area code. And in my head, I'm like, St. Louis? Come, I don't even want to answer this.
St. Louis Rams were not that great at that time.
I don't like St. Louis. Oh, God.
He's just Travis being brutally honest.
So I answer it with pride and everything, and sure enough, it's Andy Reid. And I get caught up, like, oh, this is Andy Reid?
Remember, Andy Reid had been let go by the Eagles, was immediately hired as head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City, oddly enough, is also in where? Missouri. Which Travis says he did not know, really. Which is hilarious. So he hears Andy Reid on the other end, and he's just kind of dumbfounded. Like, what? Oh my gosh.
Hey, coach, how are you? I'm doing good. I'm sitting here with my family. And he tells me, listen, are you gonna this up? Are you gonna screw up this opportunity if I take you? And I'm stuttering. I don't even know how to answer the question. Coach, I'm gonna give you everything that I have. He says, put your brother on the phone.
Keep in mind, Andy Reid, the same coach who had drafted his big brother, Jason.
And Andy asked me, what Kelce are we getting? Are we getting the one that he was the senior year? Are we getting the one that, you know, every scout has told us to look out for? You know, no, I'm vouching for him. You're getting the best tight end in this draft.
So what did Andy Reid say, Lisa, when you asked him about this moment?
He knew that Jason was going to tell him like it was.
I was excited to have him as a player, but I knew a lot about him and the footloose and fancy freeness of his personality. Sometimes you got to establish some things right there.
I think that Andy knew me, and I think he trusted that I was the type of brother that would make sure that his brother wouldn't make that same mistake again.
he handed me back the phone, and Coach Reed says, "Welcome to the Kansas City Chiefs."
The Kansas City Chiefs select Travis Kelce.
That was a pretty cool moment. Just to be there with my mother and my father. Seeing their reactions. That's why I do everything. So that I can make the people that I love smile.
So Lisa, it's now been almost 9 years since that draft day story. And Jason and Travis, they have gone to the very top of their respective positions. They've both been named first-team All-Pro multiple times. Jason won a Super Bowl 3 years ago in Super Bowl 52. Travis got his first ring last year. He's going for a second this weekend. How did Jason celebrate his brother's success? I'm wondering if their relationship has changed at all over the years.
Oh, they are just as tight as ever. I get to talk to these guys at least once a year because I always either have an Eagles game and a Chiefs game. And Travis was telling me that to be there in Miami, to have Jason be there at the Super Bowl and they win it, which is so unique and cool. He says, "I'll remember that for the rest of my life. And it's definitely something that I owe all to my big brother." We asked Travis why he wears the number 87. He wears the number because of his big brother, Jason, because that was the year that Jason was born, 1987.
Travis is where he is today because of who he's decided to be, the choices he's decided to make, who he is as a human being. He doesn't owe a thing to me.
Jason will say Travis doesn't owe him anything. Travis says that is not true. He says, "I owe everything to my big brother, Jason."
He knows he has a lot to do with my success, just as I do for him. All those backyard brawls and the battles that we had, that mentality has drove me to this point.
Lisa, how do you think Travis might celebrate if he wins the Super Bowl this weekend and gets the extra one on top of his older brother?
I'm sure that there's nothing that Travis wants more than to get this one so that he can lovingly and playfully rub it in. But at the same time, I'm sure that there would be nothing that would give Jason more pleasure than to see his little brother win another one.
The legendary Lisa Salters, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, a conversation with the man who brought NFL legends Al Davis and Pete Rozelle back from the dead.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. ESPN has a new 30 for 30 documentary out called Al Davis versus the NFL, and it's about two of the worst enemies in football history, both off-the-field icons, but in very different ways. Al Davis was, of course, the owner of the Oakland and now Las Vegas Raiders, and Pete Rozelle was the NFL commissioner who would never let Al get his way. Both men have now been deceased for years. But director Ken Rogers found a way to bring them back to life. The documentarian used deepfake technology, technology that's grown controversial for how effectively deceptive it's been in hoaxes and in memes, to create digital versions of both men on screen. And I asked Ken why this depth of fakery was worth the risk.
So we wanted the story to be told by Al Davis and Pete Rozelle because they were, A, such great characters.
Al and John and Ed, it's not silver and black, but it's close. Now, the Raiders certainly deserve today with one of the most impressive wins in Super Bowl history.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. On behalf of the Raiders, John Madden, Ed McGaw, myself, the Oakland Raiders were magnificent on that football field today. Super, super champion.
They had very specific ways of talking, of phrasing things, very specific tics on camera that you just wanted to watch them. And the second thing was really the fact that we had transcripts and research and so much material on these two guys about the feelings they had at the time. If you watch the film, I'd say 85% of the film is archive material that we have on camera from the time period. All we needed is that other 15%. And why waste that 15% on people that aren't Al and Pete?
For some owners, Pete would threaten NFL cities. Tell them about the Minnesota treatment.
Metropolitan Stadium was below guidelines and had been for years. There was a state senator who dared the Vikings to move. He seemed to think the NFL would never let it happen.
And 20 years ago, we probably would have cast actors and put wigs on them and said, you play Al and you play Pete. Technology has come a long way, and we started thinking about impersonators, and then we found the world of deep fake impersonations, and we thought, boy, are we willing to do this in a sports documentary? And it took a lot of decisions. How do we frame it where they're on screen, but we're making it clear that it's not really them?
So the voices that you are describing here, Pete Rozelle and Al Davis, I mean, we're an audio medium here, Ken. For those who are not quite so familiar with the distinctiveness of those two men and their voices, how would you describe those voices?
So Pete Rozelle is a little easier to describe. He had a sort of high-pitched, nasally sort of, he grew up in California, but he came to Park Avenue and ran the National Football League from sort of a Madison Avenue style, Mad Men sort of viewpoint.
He said, look at this, and showed me one page in which he felt the Oakland Coliseum had demonstrated bad faith. And I read part of it. Then he took all the papers back. And then he said to me, I am seriously thinking about moving to Los Angeles. And I said, well, if you are, if you decide you want to pursue it further, let me know. And I'll schedule a league meeting and it'll be reviewed.
And then Al is unique. Al grew up in Brooklyn.
I don't want any vote. You can't take a vote. That's not right.
But then he went to the Citadel for college. And then he started coaching at the Citadel. And he learned that he got along with the African-American players at the Citadel better when he sort of used a Southern affect.
John Madden, who's head of the task force down there, called me today and really believes that the season ticket applications are so tremendous that by Monday we'll sell 50,000 season tickets.
So in the film, Ken, you've got these archival clips of these two guys mixed in with the scripted stuff.
The accusation was simple. The NFL was acting as a monopoly in violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act.
But Al wanted to be a general of one team and one team only, never part of a bigger league strategy.
What kind of things did you want them to say that weren't already available in the historical archive?
Right. So part of it was giving the perspective from today. A big part of this story of why we're doing it now, you know, as a documentarian, you want to answer the question, why now, is that it's happening in 2020 because their story has finally come to an end. The new stadium built in Las Vegas marks the end of hostilities between the Rozelle camp and the Davis camp. So even their spirits can relax.
So, Ken, is this the last we're going to see of deepfake Al and Pete? Is this the end of the road for this traveling duo?
Oh, you want a sequel already, huh?
That's well, good. I was just hoping they would maybe pop up like the Tupac hologram at Coachella one day.
You know, see it in a Star Wars universe. And Mark Davis has, over the next 20 years, this incredible story relationship with Roger Goodell. You could see Al Davis showing up giving advice like Yoda. I mean, there's no doubt, right?
There's only one thing that matters is who wins. You have to win. The winner writes the history book. The winner gets the Super Bowl trophy. The winner's the genius. The winner's the highest paid player. You have to win in our culture. I've never seen anything like it, even the God.
Ken Rogers, thank you for taking us back to the future on ESPN Daily.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.